Hey yo, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast, and I am super happy to welcome a gentleman that that I've been a fan of for years. He has performed with Little Angels, which I think is a great band. He performed with Gunn, with Dio, Disciples. I mean, he's been all over the map. The reason that we're here to talk to him today is his new album from Wayward Sons, The Truth Ain't What It Used to Be. Ladies and gentlemen, Toby Jepson. Toby, how are you?
I'm very well, Brett. Lovely to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, you know, like I say, being a fan of yours for a while, listened to the Little Angels quite a bit back when they came out, but Wayward Sons, the new album, I listened to it, and it's killer.
Thank you. Oh, I really appreciate you saying that. Thanks a lot. We're very, very pleased with it.
Yeah, I can well imagine. Like, it's got a lot of... you know, like very similar stylistically, but at the same time, like you're going in a few directions with it within that style, and like there's definitely some good heavy rockers, and then there's even a little bit of like punk. It feels like Us Against the World has a little bit of punk in it. So yeah, I like where it goes.
Oh, lovely, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that was the plan. I mean, it was, when I say that was the plan, it's what happened. I mean, I think, you know, the first album, Ghosts Are Yet to Come, was, by and large, it was a bit of an experiment, really, because the guys I was working with at the time, none of us had ever made a music together apart from me and Dave Kemp, the keyboard player, who was actually the saxophone player in Little Angels for years in our touring band. But we were good friends, but the rest of us hadn't made records together, and it was a fun experiment, and we thought, let's just see what we can do together, let's see how this can go. Unfortunately, you know, for all the right reasons, the album came together great, and we had a great critical reception for that record. So when we actually sort of, the dust had settled on that album, and I sat down and I started thinking about making this record, I genuinely didn't know what I was going to do. I was in that situation where it was like only the second time in my whole career where I've had to sort of make a follow-up record, if you like. I mean, and that in itself is quite daunting, because you've spent a long time making your first record and trying to get the narrative right. But I think once I kind of tapped the vein and I started to understand that I wanted to talk about, you know, the world and how things are, you know, the human condition, which, you know, currently is hugely challenging, specifically from a sort of social political point of view, you know, and I've never held my opinions back about these things. As soon as I started tapping that vein and realised there was a rich amount of things to talk about, the songs came thick and fast. But it also allowed me to sort of broaden the palette. I wanted to talk about some things in a different way and start to widen the narrative. And also, the big thing is that we as a band had got to know each other so well by this point, because we'd been touring almost solidly for sort of 18 months or 2 years, that we'd got to know each other, you know, sort of absolutely inside and out. And so when we came to sit down and work on this album, it naturally had progressed already. You know, we knew where we, what each of our influences were, and what we all liked, and then we'd spoken a lot about those things. And so the evolution was very, very, was natural. You know, it was a kind of, I hate the term, but it was very organic. You know, it really appeared in the way that it appeared without forcing it. So yes, I mean, and I've always been someone who's, I've allowed the music to do the dictating. I've never been one to sort of try and find an answer. I want the answer to present itself through the endeavor of creating the art, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, I'm very pleased with it. I hope people understand the message, and I can't wait for people to hear it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. How important then is it to kind of, you know, gel and understand the band and the way the personalities work?
Oh, it's enormously important. I mean, you know, the music business and being in a band is about the people. Yes, it's about the music, of course it is, but it's really about the humans. It's about the people physically making the music together. And the trick and the difficulty is finding like-minded individuals that you can make a wonderful racket with, ultimately. And that's the joy of it. Once you do find a group of people that can do that, it then becomes a kind of a quest for understanding each other and delivering that sort of collective idea together. I mean, as I've always been in bands, I've tried to be a solo artist, and it's never really worked. You know, I need other people around me, and I want that human thing. I want that connection, that interaction. You know, we're not any different from anybody else on the planet. We just happen to make music, and I think ultimately, our job is to connect with other people. That's what it's about. You know, I'm far, far more interested in the things that are coming out of my mouth and the things that I'm saying and how that collectively as a band stacks up. That's what I'm interested in, getting a conversation going, having an understanding that, you know, of that we're all the same and we're all striving for the same things. And that's what art has always been great about, hasn't it? You know, it's always been a great way of surmising and bringing together communities and bringing together people and a collective understanding of where we're at, you know. And this record is certainly that, you know. It's my search for the truth. It's ultimately our band's search for an answer. And I hope that people understand that, and they can read the positivity in that, you know. So yes, it's all about the personalities. It's all about getting to understand each other, and hoping that the collection of that together is potent enough for people to enjoy and to get into, you know.
Yeah, one of the things that I've really been thinking a lot of right now is the fact that when I do think about music and songwriting, and of course, as you say, like you're trying to write songs about things that speak to you that are going on in the world right now. But you know, music is also about being fun. So it's like, how do you kind of balance the two elements?
Yeah, well, I mean, that is always the struggle. I mean, I've you know, I grew up listening to Queen. I grew up listening to David Bowie. You know, some of the greatest artists of all time that were able to balance these things. You know, it for me, it's not simply an entertainment. It really is a way of life. You know, I live and breathe music, and it's been something I've done for 30 years, and I'm feeling enormously privileged that I'm still able to do it. But yes, you're right. It has to be a balance. Otherwise, it can become too mawkish. It can be too oppressive for people to listen to. And I'm not into that. I'm not a politician. What I am is a commentator, a human commentator on. And this is my view. This is how I'm viewing the world. And because you know, I'm the principal songwriter in the band. And so these are most of the messages come from myself. You know, but at the same time, you know, how can you not be influenced by watching Freddie Mercury in Queen, or watching David Bowie and the characters that those guys invested so much time in and were able to deliver with such aplomb and such clarity? And yes, it's enormously about entertainment. When I go on a stage, I want people to walk out of that venue having been uplifted by my music, and hopefully within that music and that uplift, they've learned something, and maybe they've taken away a message from it that can help them further down the line, you know. So It is a very fine line you tread. I certainly don't want to preach to anybody, but I do want to hold a conversation, and I'm prepared to stand my corner and support and stick to my guns in terms of what I'm trying to say, you know.
Well, and you do have a platform for being able to say things, and I think that you know, you've obviously given yourself that platform, but I think I appreciate the fact that you're willing to say something, but at the same time, you can do it in such a way that you're not like trying to hammer that down somebody's throat.
Yeah, absolutely, and that, again, that's really important. You know, I'm not a politician, I'm not a world leader. You know, most musicians aren't. You know, in fact, all the musicians shouldn't consider themselves that. You know, what I'm trying to do is I don't know. I'm just trying to hold a conversation and just sort of say, look, I'm here too. I'm going through these things as well. You know, and because the other thing is that Brett, there's an awful lot of people, the vast majority of people, find it very hard to know how to say things that they're feeling. And I think that's one of the great messages, that one of the great sort of services that music and art, you know, brings, is that quite often it's the words or the actions put into art that people find hard to say themselves, you know. So I think there's a part of it's that. I mean, I do think there's a kind of quite a big responsibility on artists to sort of be true, to try and speak the truth as they see it, you know, and talk about the things that are affecting us and on a daily basis, you know. And like I say, I'm as scared and as terrified and as joyed and as overjoyed as the next man is about all kinds of things. So it's it's about connection. It's about people. It's about action and reaction. You know, I say something, and hopefully the people in the audience will react to that, and we can all help each other. You know.
Yeah, because you never know how somebody's going to take your lyrics and the songs. I mean, and somebody could listen to it, have a completely different interpretation than you were actually intending. But at the same time, it could be a wonderful interpretation that you hadn't even thought of.
That's very true, and I think yes, that it is. It is all about personal interpretation. But you know, I'm. Like I say, I think you have to stand by your courage of your convictions when you're an artist. You have to be prepared to say, no, this is what I believe, and this is what I want to talk about, and this is my point of view. And not everyone agrees with that, of course. I mean, but I'm not afraid of that. I never have been. I think, you know, I don't believe I'll live another life. I believe this is my only life I'm ever going to live, and I want to do the best I possibly can with it and do something positive with it. And if that means, you know, sometimes upsetting people because I'm trying my hardest to make a point that I believe in, then that's part of the human condition. That's part of the human human experience, isn't it? So, you know, it's part entertainment for me, but it's certainly part narrative and part message driven, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, I mean, but like you so rightly say, it's all down to the listener. It's all down to how you perceive it and how you interpret it.
Yeah. So tell me then about your writing process, especially as it pertained to this album.
Well, I mean, it was quite a long process in many ways. I mean, I started thinking about writing this record towards the end, I think, of the major campaign on the first album, and I'd kind of put it to the back of my mind because I was kind of terrified of the fact I had to start writing again, because it, you know, the first album, like I say, had been a bit of an experiment, but it had happened quite easily, and it had been really joyous, and you know, we'd kind of come up with the songs quite quickly, and they all seemed to work, and blah blah blah. So this process was different. I found myself sort of, you know, wondering what I'm going to talk about, and like I say, the narrative started to evolve as soon as I started sort of getting into it. And what I tend to do with the process for me is it's a process of a lot of thinking time, a lot of working on ideas that lead to one idea leads to another. I mean, you know, I had a period, a very fevered period of time of about maybe 3 months or so, one specific 2-week period where I wrote, I just couldn't stop writing songs at all. You know, it was one of those kind of magic moments where I really tapped the vein, and one thing tumbled out after another thing tumbled out, and I ended up with 56 songs I brought to the band. I know it sounds mad, but it's the truth, you know. But of course, you know, not every one of those 56 songs is fully formed, and they're not all fantastic, of course, you know. So the whole process was, what are we going to do with this material? How are we going to we figure this out? And so we eventually sort of distilled that down to about 27 working ideas in the studio, and we worked on 27 songs in the studio until eventually we ended up recording 19. I mean, we're going to end up probably with about three to four songs from the last sessions that are going to end up on the next album. That's how far we got into it. So it became a kind of cascade of ideas, and then it was the task really was searching through everything that we had and trying to join the dots, trying to find the songs that connected, the ones that sort of presented themselves as the strongest choices. And it was it's been the most collaborative effort album I've ever made, really. And the guys have been incredible. I mean, the guys in the band are supreme musicians, and you know, have helped me all right along the way from start to finish to realize this project, and I couldn't do it without them. And I do regard this as a very, very proper band. You know, we're all in it together, everyone contributes, and the results are what people hear. You know, it's very hard to explain it. I've got to say, when everyone asks me that question, I sort of think, I actually don't know how I write songs. They just kind of visit themselves on me, you know. It's a bit of a mad thing to try to explain, you know?
That's funny. So one of the things that stands out to me about the album, of course, is the cover. That cover is absolutely amazing, so I'd love to know where that came from.
Yeah, well, I mean, the guy who designs this is a guy called Stuart Dilley, and he did the first record and as well Ghosts Are Yet to Come. And Stuart's just a fantastically talented illustrator. I mean, he works on all kinds of things, comics, book illustrations. He also runs a company that design jewelry, and he's just a multi-talented guy. And me and Stuart have got a very close relationship. I mean, I rang Stuart's way back in the day on the first album to describe to him, you know, what I was trying to do and the kind of images I was after. And I've always been obsessed with comic books myself. As a kid, I collected comic books, and specifically the kind of 1950s pulp comics from the US that were, you know, really they were stories that hit a deep message, and quite often were subversive in their tone because of the House of American un-American activities that was raging at the time, you know. And I collected a lot of these storybooks, and they were amazing tales and weird tales and things like that. And I've always loved that kind of concept. And so when I was talking to Stuart, he sort of said to me, "Oh, I used to collect those as well, man. They were brilliant. I love those." And so we were immediately on the same page. And so I just kind of left him to it. And we have conversations. He listens to the songs. We talk about what it's all about. And then he comes up with these amazing pieces of work, you know. And I think that's the great thing about it. You know, pure art and pure expression through art isn't a committee, isn't done by committee. It's done by a visionary moment and a moment of inspiration. And I truly believe that. You know, you can't sit around a table and create a sleeve like The Truth of Fame, what it used to be. You have to allow one person's vision and focus to lead the way. And that's what I do. I don't ever tread on his toes. I let him get on with it, and then the results speak for themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that brings up an interesting question to me, because you talk about your relationship with him, and I know you've worked with so many wonderful artists in your career. So how important is it to form those relationships and to really just, you know, be consistent and always, like, really nice and that kind of thing throughout your career?
Yeah, well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'm mostly driven by relationships. I'm mostly driven with my desire to work with talented people. I know how I work. I know how I tick. I'm a crazed lunatic one minute, and the next minute I'm a big teddy bear, you know. And I think this is what being creative is about. You have to find like-minded people that understand and are willing to allow you to be the person you are. This is about personalities. This is about having a unique perspective. This is about being and then being able to deliver that unique perspective. I mean, I don't believe you can be taught to write songs. I don't believe you can be taught to be a writer. I don't believe you can be taught to be a fine artist. I think it's naturally within you, and it's something that you develop yourself, and you have to be driven by that desire to create. And so that in itself is quite hard to handle. You know, I think certainly when people work with extreme characters in the art world, the reports are often, "Oh, they're so difficult." You know, "Oh my God, I couldn't stand being around that person." Well, unfortunately, that's kind of what it's about. You know, it's about that unique perspective, that visionary thing, and it comes in degrees. You know, I mean, I've worked with some astounding musicians as a producer, because I produce records for bands as well, and I've come across some extraordinary characters that are almost impenetrable as people, but their art is so potent that you have to just let them get on with it. But then there are degrees of that as well. And so what I try and seek to do is seek out people that are optimistic, that are positive, that really want to create great stuff, that have got a unique vision, a vision of what they want to achieve. And those are the people I'm drawn to. And I think that's about as good as it gets. Because nobody's right all the time. No one's got nobody's got the sort of monopoly on beauty or perfection when it comes to art. It's all about, like I say, a unique perspective, and nothing's right, nothing's wrong. It's just about quality and having that communication and that established communication. And so, like I say, those are the people I seek. I mean, I've worked with some fantastic people. Everyone from Biff Byford from Saxon is what a great example of a real down-to-earth, you know, rock and roller. Right through to, you know, I work with, like I say, I think as we were talking just before we came on, started this conversation, you know, I worked with Jim Vallance, who was a co-writer with Brian Adams for years, and Jim was an extremely cerebral, very intelligent, very quiet man with a real fantastic skill of writing fantastic pop music in many, many ways. And so, you know, and everything in between. And actually, and the more extreme of the characters, the more potent the art is, in my experience. And so it just depends on how far you're willing to go.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So then when you're producing, and especially if you're producing somebody that is an extreme character, like what are ways, like do you try to use different ways to kind of bring them in and to get them working, you know, in a specific way, or do you just kind of let them go and work as they would normally work?
Well, what I try and do is put them in my shoes, because what I like, if anyone's working with me, is I like the atmosphere to be one of fun and possibility, and to build an atmosphere of anything's possible, so you can allow the relaxation to happen, and so the work starts to peel out. You know, I mean, that doesn't always work for everybody, but that's my approach. When I'm working with a band in a studio, my whole approach is we build an atmosphere to allow the music to flow and to be free forming, and it's a kind of, you know, any idea on the table is a good idea sort of thing. But at the same time, you have to recognise that, especially in bands, quite often it's usually one, maybe two people that are driving from the front, and you have to recognize that. You know, bands are not democracies. They're usually driven by one or two people, and the trick really is, in those situations, is to allow that message and that vision to come out whilst including everybody else. And so, because, you know, everyone else's contributions are just as important, but in a different way. So it's all about collaboration. It's all about making sure that you give everyone the chance to enjoy themselves and to deliver the message. I mean, not everyone's like that. Some people like to be melodramatic, and some people like to be sort of, you know, in their sort of gnash their teeth and sort of be in this world of doom and gloom, and that's their creative pulse. But by and large, my experience of this is that, you know, quite often people feel very fragile about their work and have never really been given the opportunity to talk with real clarity with their unique voice. And so my challenge always, as it is with me when I'm making music, is that I find an atmosphere that allows that to come out and allows that to be the driving force. Because we're all fragile. I think most artists, you know, are scared to death that they're going to get found out, that they aren't real, that it's not authentic enough or stuff like that, you know. And I think that is a common threat that I've met with most of my friends, and most of the most successful people I've ever worked with all feel like that, you know, that, oh no, I'm a complete fraud, and when are people going to realize this about me? It's just part of the sort of the part of the process when you are artistic, you know.
Well, and I guess it all comes down to that whole thing that, like you said earlier, about like, you can't learn to be a songwriter, you can't learn to do this stuff. So it's just like, if by that token, you're not going to school to become a songwriter, which hopefully you're not, but then it's just like, yeah, I can see that there's no, like there's nothing that kind of gives you that moment where it's just like, okay, yeah, I went to school, I learned how to do this, so of course I'm trained at how to do this. But no, you're not specifically. You're just going off the seat of your pants and just hoping that whatever you create, you know, strikes that chord with the audience.
Absolutely, it's all pure chance. There are no rules, and they certainly shouldn't be. I mean, the kind of crazy thing for me is that when I was first starting out as a musician, and I was trying to learn to play the guitar, because I'm a very average musician, but that's not the point. I come from the school of such, the John Lennon school of songwriting, that it's not the technicalities of the songwriting, it's the emotion, it's the communication, it's the things that you're saying. You've got to have something to say, and it's tapping that, and it's understanding that, and finding an authentic way of saying that is most important, more than important than anything else, in my opinion. And so, you know, when I was a kid and I was growing up in that situation, it was still that generation where being in a rock and roll band or being a musician was still kind of frowned upon. People didn't really think it was a proper job. They used to say, no, it's not a proper job, and all that stuff, you know, all that kind of cliche. But the truth of the matter is, what it really was kind of an anti-establishment. Being in a rock band was kind of anti-establishment. You were rallying against the man. But now, in the last 20, 25 years, the music business has become the establishment. There's more music colleges out there, more music schools, more ways of like supposedly learning how to be a rock star, when I don't even know what a rock star is. I don't know what it is. I've never understood what it is. I don't understand what these labels are, because it's not what you think about when you're kind of purist in your work, you know. So there's a kind of crazy flip that's happened now, is that, you know, parents are sending their kids into schools to learn how to be a rock star. I mean, I lecture a few of these colleges in the UK, and I find it quite amazing that the very thing that they should be doing, which is fending for themselves and finding out how to do it on their own terms, from the streets in the back of a transit van, nothing could be further from the truth. You know, you've got tutors trying to sort of explain to them what the music business is about, and it seems to be more about, you know, likes and Facebook posts than it does about actually making music, and I think that's incorrect. But having said that, at the same time, you know, the world turns and we all change, and things do change. And I am constantly astounded by the quality of musicianship with young people, which I think by and large is down to YouTube tutorials and things like that.
It certainly doesn't
seem to be the way it used to be, which is learning it on the road in your own time and all the rest of it. I mean, and that's not to put anyone down at all. I mean, I think it's extraordinary that people can play to the abilities, to the level of ability that they have these days. It is absolutely something to witness. But that doesn't mean to say that they're going to write potent music that's going to get to an audience, because that's something different. That's really, really in your heart and in your soul, and something that you learn as you go along, but you've got to have a natural pulse for it to start with, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's just quickly talk about, do you have an upcoming tour, and if so, like, what do people can people expect out of Wayward Sons on tour?
Well, I mean, right now we're opening for a lot of bands. I mean, obviously specifically in the UK and Europe, we're about to go out with Black Star Riders in the UK and in Europe over through October, November, and then we start again back in January with Steel Panther in Europe, and back into the UK with them, and then, you know, we're going to hopefully spread our wings around the globe, hopefully, as this record starts to roll out, you know, and as the career develops. I mean, we're very much a sort of traditional rock and roll band, really, but one thing I think that perhaps sets us aside is that all of the guys in the band, apart from our guitar player Sam, we've all been in bands before. We've all been in lots of different bands, and, you know, for instance, you know, our drummer, Phil, he plays for Joe Elliott's Down and Out. Mm-hmm. He's in Spear of Destiny, and he's done a number of other things, and so we know what we're doing, and we're all very much into the kind of dynamism of playing live, and so there's a kind of healthy amount of experience going on stage, and so we plot our touring and our set list accordingly. But, you know, ultimately, as this rolls out, I'm really, really interested in developing the kind of more theatrical side of the band, certainly from an artistic point of view. I think you're going to start to see, once we start to headline, a lot of the imagery we use through the videos and through the artwork on the album sleeves, and I want to develop that, because those are the bands that I loved. I mean, if you went to see David Bowie back in the day, or Queen, you were going to get a show. You know, it was going to be a show. It wasn't just going to be four guys stood on the stage rocking out. It was lots going on. There was, you know, the lights, the everything about it was kind of like almost like a theatrical piece, and I'd like to evolve that a little bit more if we get the chance. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, you know, we're a downhill rock and roll band with a message, and I just hope people get the message, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, Toby, I know I'm running out of time with you, which is a shame, because I could probably talk to you for hours on end, I think. But October 11th is the release of the album, The Truth Ain't What It Used to Be, Frontiers Music. I'll just give you a quick opportunity here to tell the fans where to find you guys.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Well, yeah, like you say, the record's coming out on this Friday, October the 11th, and we, you know, you can visit us at our website, visit us on Facebook. You know, we've through the Frontiers page, or you can buy the record or order the record through Amazon. We're all through the usual outlets, and what we're really hoping is that, you know, once we can kind of get our toes under, you know, with this record, and we can start to sort of see some reactions, that we can start, you know, hopefully we can get over to Canada and do some shows. That's ultimately my plan, is to spread this as far and wide as we can. But it's always, you know, I've always believed this is about the fans. I've always believed that this, the only reason I can survive and I'm even here talking to you, is because of the generosity of the fans and how they react to the music. And I'm in the fans' hands, and so I just hope that people who do get a chance to listen to this record can appreciate it and can spread the word for us, because that's what it really comes down to.
For sure. Well, I can tell you, if you get over here, you've got at least two people that are going to be in the audience. So that's something. But Toby Jepson, wonderful interview. Really appreciated having you on the show. I wish you nothing but the best. Wayward Sons, The Truth Ain't What It Used to Be. I think it's an awesome album, and I think everybody should listen to it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely wonderful being here, Brett, and I really appreciate your time, and hope to speak to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to it.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Looks like the